Bava Metzia, Perk Aleph, Mishnah Zion 1:7, and more about documents that are found and the obligation to return them. This Mishnah will talk about documents that are not Shtarei Chov, not IOUs, and still we will say that one should not return them, even though ostensibly it should be pretty obvious who the addressee is and to whom it belongs. And the reason for all of them is going to be the same, which is these things could have been written and never delivered in the first place. They're written ahead of time, and so there's no reason to be confident that you should give it to the recipient because it has massive consequences, and maybe it was never intended to be delivered in the first place. So the mission says, Matza Gite Nashim, if one finds a get for a woman, a divorce contract, again, it's plural, but one or more makes no difference. The assumption would be one, in fact. So then one, we'll see, shouldn't return it because perhaps the person wrote the get, had it written, and then he never delivered it to her. He changed his mind. Or v'shichrurei avadim. This is a get shichrur. It's an emancipation document for a slave. So one who owns a slave, this is Eved Kanani, Shifcha Kananis, the way that they're emancipated, they're released to become free, is through a similar process. They're given a document kind of like a get. It's very similar to a get. And on it it says, you're free to go, you're your own person. But again, one would go to a scribe ahead of time and have this written, and who says that the person intended to actually carry out and went ahead and actually delivered it to the slave? Maybe he never did. Maybe he changed his mind. It got lost, and now if you give it to the slave, of course, slave goes free. That's not fair, not good. A diatiki, the same goes for a diatiki. This is hard to translate. What's going on here is that when a person wants to transfer ownership of something, normally you need to have a formal ma'aseh kinyan, a formal act that transfers the ownership. Like, for example, if you have your Rolex watch that you want to give to someone, they would need to pick it up in order to acquire it. And the truth is you even could pick it up on their behalf and be mezakeh to them. But the point is, if one just says, I'm giving my Rolex to my friend, doesn't matter, it's not your friends yet, and if a person would then die, the heirs, his children, would get the Rolex watch and not the friend. All that said, if a person is a shchiv meira, which means like sort of on his deathbed, so the rabbis made a din d'rabban and they said, listen, people are on their deathbeds, they get very anxious, they didn't sort out their financial affairs, and they'll think, oh my goodness, I promised my best friend I'd give him my Rolex watch, I never did, now I'm going to die, and my kids are going to get it, and I'm going to die with a bad name, and the anxiety, the anxiousness, the upset that's caused by not having sorted out one's affairs, Chazal were concerned, would actually expedite the death, make the person die sooner because of the stress he's under. And therefore the rabbi said, listen, one who's on his deathbed, just simply a verbal declaration, just speaking alone, will carry the same weight as the full-fledged legal action that would transfer ownership properly. So that means if a person's on his deathbed and he says, I want my best friend to get my Rolex watch as I promised him, whatever the story is, so then that's binding. And the Rolex watch now will be, assuming this person dies, will be given over to the friend and not inherited by the heirs of this, the person who's dying. That's a din d'rabbanan. It was commonplace that people would write down these instructions because if you don't write them down, they could be forgotten, there could be confusion, etc. And therefore, the diatiki is the writing down of the wishes of the person on his deathbed regarding the disposition of certain assets while the person is still alive. Okay? So I would say essentially, so-and-so is on his deathbed and he said he wanted to give the watch to his friend before he died. Now, we don't give that to the friend because then the friend could sort of take the watch, let's call it by force, if you will, from the kids. He could try to, and maybe it was never actually, it's not legitimate. Maybe the person on deathbed changed his mind, didn't do it after all, didn't want to do it. So that being the case, we wouldn't give the daitiki over to the person to whom it was the beneficiary of what's written inside of it. Same goes for a matana, a general gift. There is a way to transfer ownership. You can do like a kinyan siddur. There are ways to transfer gifts without the recipient being present. And essentially, the contract says, I'm giving over my watch or my home or whatever it is to so-and-so as a gift, and that could be legally binding if done the right way. The point is, if you find such a document that says that, you shouldn't give it to the recipients in the document because maybe the person who owned the gift decided not to give it over after all and never delivered it, never intended to be delivered, never did the actions required to transfer it, and therefore you can't just give it over to the recipients because it might be not right. Shovar is a receipt. So usually what happens is, as I said before in the previous Mishnah, if the borrower repays his debt, so then the lender would give him back the IOU for the borrower to tear, for the borrower to tear up. You can think of it just like an uncashed check, right? I give you $100 loan and you give me a check made out to me and I say, listen, I won't deposit the check provided you give me back the cash. So when you give me back the cash, I'll give you back your undeposited check. That's how it would normally go. What happens if the borrower comes up with $100 and then he says, where's my uncashed check? Where's my IOU? Where's my shtar? And the shtar chov, it's called again. And the lender says, oh, I can't find it. I lost it or who knows what. So now what's supposed to happen? The borrower has to pay back his debt, but the lender now, if he really is keeping the IOU or he finds it in 10 years, he can just say, listen, it was never paid and he can claim a second time. So what he has to do instead is give a shovar, that's a receipt, of payment to the borrower, which says, on such and such a date, so-and-so paid me back $100 that he owed me from that loan. And that way, if in the future the lender whips out this shtar that they, like, so to speak, tried to deposit the uncashed check, the borrower will say, what are you talking about? I paid you back, and here's the proof. I have a shovar as a receipt. So the assumption is that when has a, if you find a shovar on the street, maybe think you give it back to the borrower, because that's who else would you write a shovar to. It's written by the lender to the borrower. The answer is maybe, you know, he had it pre-written by, you know, a sofer waiting, so it should be in his pocket for whenever he does get repaid. Maybe he never was repaid. Therefore, maybe he never gave the shovar to the borrower. And then maybe he lost it. And now if you give it to the borrower gets away without having to pay. Okay? So in all those cases, hare ze lo yachazir, and all these different things, the gittin, the shechrurin, the diatiki, the matana, the shover, you don't give it back to the person to whom it seems it should belong to. Shani omer, because it's possible to say, ksuvim hayu, yes, they were written legitimately, v'nimlach aleihen shlo litnam, but then the person who had them written changed their mind and never actually delivered this document. And therefore, to actually deliver it to the one to whom it was addressed would actually be like an injustice. This is din lahalacha. Of course, if the person who wrote it says, yes, you should give it to the person whom I wrote it to, I permit it or instruct it, then of course the finder should give it to the addressee. So like, for example, the Eved or the recipient of the gift and so on. Now, when it comes to the Gittei Nashim, it's a little more complicated because a woman's divorce document, the get, needs to be written lishma for the sake of specifically her, has to be specifically done, you know, by this husband to this wife and for her sake of that divorce. So you wouldn't be allowed to give it to the woman as her get unless you knew for certainty that it was written originally for this particular woman by this particular man for the sake of this particular divorce.